Today we'll be continuing The Scarlet Letter by Nathaniel Hawthorne. Chapter 8, The Elf Child and the Minister, Part 1. Governor Bellingham, in a loose gown and easy cap, such as elderly gentlemen loved to endue themselves with in their domestic privacy, walked foremost and appeared to be showing off his estate and expatiating on his projected improvements. The wide circumference of an elaborate ruff beneath his gray beard in the antiquated fashion of King James's reign caused his head to look not a little like that of John the Baptist in a charger. The impression made by his aspect, so rigid and severe and frostbitten with more than autumnal age, was hardly in keeping with the appliances of worldly enjoyment wherewith he had evidently done his utmost to surround himself. But it is an error to suppose that our grave forefathers, though accustomed to speak and think of human existence as a state merely of trial and warfare, and though unfeignedly prepared to sacrifice goods and life at the behest of duty, made it a matter of conscience to reject such means of comfort, or even luxury, as lay fairly within their grasp. This creed was never taught, for instance, by the venerable pastor John Wilson, whose beard, white as a snowdrift, was seen over Governor Bellingham's shoulder, while its wearer suggested that pears and peaches might yet be naturalized in the New England climate, and that purple grapes might possibly be compelled to nourish against the sunny garden wall. The old clergyman, nurtured at the rich bosom of the English church, had a long established and legitimate taste for all good and comfortable things. And however stern he might show himself in the pulpit, or in his public reproof for such transgressions as that of Hester Prynne, still, the genial benevolence of his private life had won him warmer affection than was accorded to any of his professional contemporaries. Behind the governor and Mr. Wilson came two other guests. One, the Reverend Arthur Dimmesdale, whom the reader may remember as having taken a brief and reluctant part in the scene of Hester Prynne's disgrace, and, in close companionship with him, old Roger Chillingworth, a person of great skill and psychic, who, for 2 or 3 years past, had been settled in the town. It was understood that this learned man was the physician as well as a friend of the young minister, whose health had severely suffered of late by his too unreserved self-sacrifice to the labors and duties of the pastoral relation. The governor, in advance of his visitors, ascended 1 or 2 steps, and throwing open the leaves of the great hall window, found himself close to Little Pearl. The shadow of the curtain fell on Hester Prynne and partially concealed her. "What have we here?" said Governor Bellingham, looking with surprise at the scarlet little figure before him. "I profess I've never seen the like since my days of vanity in old King James's time, when I was wont to esteem it a high favor to be admitted to a court mask. There used to be a swarm of these small apparitions in holiday time, and we called them children of the Lord of Misrule. But how gads such a guest into my hall?" "Ah, indeed," cried good old Mr. Wilson. "What little bird of scarlet plumage may this be? Methinks I've seen just such figures when the sun has been shining through a richly painted window and tracing out the golden and crimson images across the floor. But that was in the old land. Prithee, young one, who art thou? And what has ailed thy mother to bedizen thee in this strange fashion? Art thou a Christian child? Huh? Dost know thy catechism? Or art thou one of those naughty elves or fairies whom we thought to have left behind us with other relics of papistry in merry old England?"
"I am mother's child," answered the scarlet vision. "And my name is Pearl."
"Pearl. Ruby, rather. Or coral, or red rose at the very least, judging from thy hue," responded the old minister, putting forth his hand in a vain attempt to pat little Pearl on the cheek. "But where is this mother of thine? Ah, I see," he added. And turning to Governor Bellingham, whispered, "This is the selfsame child of whom we have held speech together, and behold here the unhappy woman, Hester Prynne, her mother."
"Sayest thou so?" cried the governor. "Nay, we might have judged that such a child's mother must needs be a scarlet woman, and a worthy type of her to Babylon. But she comes at a good time, and we will look into this matter forthwith."
Governor Bellingham stepped through the window into the hall, followed by his three guests.
"Hester Prynne," said he,
fixing his naturally stern regard on the wearer of the scarlet letter,
There hath been much question concerning thee of late. The point hath been weightily discussed, whether we, that are of authority and influence, do well discharge our consciences by trusting an immortal soul, such as there is in yonder child, to the guidance of one who hath stumbled and fallen amid the pitfalls of this world. Speak thou, the child's own mother. Were it not, thinkest thou, for thy little one's temporal and eternal welfare, that she be taken out of thy charge, and clad soberly, and disciplined strictly, and instructed in the truths of heaven and earth? What canst thou do for the child in this kind?
I can teach my little Pearl what I have learned from this, answered Hester Prynne, laying her finger on the red token.
Woman, it is thy badge of shame, replied the stern magistrate. It is because of the stain which that letter indicates that we would transfer thy child to other hands.
Nevertheless, said the mother calmly, though growing more pale, this badge hath taught me. It daily teaches me. It is teaching me at this moment lessons whereof my child may be the wiser and better, albeit they can profit nothing to myself.
We will judge warily, said Bellingham, and look well what we are about to do. Good Master Wilson, I pray you examine this Pearl, since that is her name, and see whether she hath had such Christian nurture as befits a child of her age.
The old minister seated himself in an armchair and made an effort to draw Pearl betwixt his knees. But the child, unaccustomed to the touch or familiarity of any but her mother, escaped through the open window and stood on the upper step, looking like a wild tropical bird of rich plumage, ready to take flight into the upper air. Mr. Wilson, not a little astonished at this outbreak, for he was a grandfatherly sort of personage, and usually a vast favorite with children, essayed, however, to proceed with the examination.
Pearl, said he with great solemnity, thou must take heed to instruction, that so, in due season, thou mayest wear in thy bosom the pearl of great price. Canst thou tell me, my child, who made thee?
Now, Pearl knew well enough who made her, for Hester Prynne, the daughter of a pious home, very soon after her talk with the child about her heavenly father, had begun to inform her of those truths which the human spirit, at whatever stage of immaturity, imbibes with such eager interest. Pearl, therefore, so large were the attainments of her 3 years' lifetime, could have borne a fair examination in the New England Primer, or the first column of the Westminster Catechisms, although unacquainted with the outward form of either of those celebrated works. But that perversity which all children have more or less of, and of which little Pearl had a tenfold portion, now, at the most inopportune moment, took thorough possession of her, and closed her lips, or impelled her to speak words amiss. After putting her finger in her mouth, with many ungracious refusals to answer good Mr. Wilson's question, the child finally announced that she had not been made at all, but had been plucked by her mother off the bush of wild roses that grew by the prison door. This fantasy was probably suggested by the near proximity of the governor's red roses, as Pearl stood outside of the window, together with her recollection of the prison rosebush which she had passed in coming hither. Old Roger Chillingworth, with a smile on his face, whispered something in the young clergyman's ear. Hester Prynne looked at the man of skill, and even then, with her fate hanging in the balance, was startled to perceive what a change had come over his features, how much uglier they were, how his dark complexion seemed to have grown duskier, and his figure more misshapen since the days when she had familiarly known him. She met his eyes for an instant, but was immediately constrained to give all her attention to the scene now going forward.
"This is awful," cried the governor,
slowly recovering from the astonishment into which Pearl's response had thrown him.
"Here is a child of 3 years old, and she cannot tell who made her. Without question, she is equally in the dark as to her soul, its present depravity and future destiny. Methinks, gentlemen, we need inquire no further."
Thank you for joining Bite at a Time Books today, while we read a bite of one of your favorite classics. Again, my name is Bree Carlisle, and I hope you come back tomorrow for the next bite of The Scarlet Letter.